Not sure why, I don't even know the girl. Except for that crazy, sexy hair, she's not my type. And I don't walk around with my crack hanging out, moron. Reaching over my desk, he grabs a pencil and twirls it on the counter. Silence settles over us as I watch him spin that number two. Finally, he says, "Remember that time I almost got arrested for mooning Charles DeWitt's daughter? Dad was so pissed. How was I supposed to know her family was in the car with her? I thought she was driving her friends back from the football game." "What was that, your senior year of high school?" He nods, and I laugh. "I got the highlights when Dad called me that weekend. Your antics made up the bulk of our phone calls when I was at A&M. Chuckling, I point at him with my cup of coffee before I take a sip. "And everyone says you have a way with women. I bet showing Casey DeWitt your hairy balls won her over fast." "I'll have you know I nailed Casey in her daddy's barn 2 weeks after the mooning incident. She didn't seem to mind my hairy balls one bit. That girl teabags like a champ." "Jesus, bro." I shake my head and tuck my hair back in my baseball cap. TMI. Logan has always been a player with a capital P. I wasn't a monk growing up, but I didn't fuck everything with two legs either. Reaching for a pen so I can pay some bills, I glance over when he doesn't respond. Shoulders tight, eyebrows cinched, he shakes his head. "I was so busy raising hell in high school, I didn't notice the signs that Dad was working too hard." Oh, hell. The familiar rush of guilt for not being here when it happened makes my stomach clench. Dad died that spring, right before Allison told me she was pregnant. While my friends were partying and going off to start their lives, I was burying my father and worrying my girlfriend might abort our baby. Of course, I told her I'd support her decision, stand by her, whatever it was. I might be old-fashioned in a lot of ways, but I'm not arrogant enough to think I have any say over what a woman does with her body. But I'd also be lying if I said I didn't want her to have Mila. Even if I wasn't in any way prepared to be a parent, I always wanted my daughter. It seemed like the right thing to do, to marry Allison and support her and our child. I knew Allison and I didn't have amazing chemistry, but we had fun together, and I thought that could turn into love. Besides, I always abide by my commitments, and I wasn't gonna let her go through a situation like that by herself. Her parents were less than thrilled with her marrying some guy from the sticks, even though they knew my folks since they were horse enthusiasts. I would have done anything to get my dad's advice in those days. Ignoring the sting in my eyes, I clear my throat. Those were rough times, but you're not a fortune teller, Logan. No way for you to know Dad's ticker wasn't healthy. The doctor said that kind of thing takes out high school kids when they're playing football. The right tackle, the right hit, and lights out. Our mom made us both get echocardiograms to make sure we hadn't inherited the condition. I wait until Logan looks up and wipes his eyes. "No, you kept Dad young, kept him on his toes. Not every man in this county can say his son mooned Charles DeWitt and lived to talk about it. I tend to think Dad was proud of his progeny on most days." Logan laughs, and relief settles over me to see him smile. "Why you always gotta use such big words, huh?" "'Cause I'm what you call edumacated." Regret eats at me since Logan never got a chance to go to college. He wanted to stay here to help me. He swears he doesn't care, that school was never his thing, but it still bothers me he had to buckle down so soon. My brother's smile fades, and he stares at me a long, awkward minute before his expression hardens. "Okay, you educated bastard. Do yourself a favor and hire Tori before you die of a heart attack out there trying to do everything on your own. If you're so damn smart, get some help before you work yourself to death. Think about Mila and Cody. They need you to grow old and fat and lose your hair. A lump rises in my throat. Logan leans forward, his eyes somber, as he waits for the answer he wants to hear, one I reluctantly give him. Fine. I'll hire Tori if it'll get you off my ass. I snatch the baseball hat off my head and toss it at him. And ain't no one losing his hair around here, asshole. Logan leans back in his chair, the smile on his face telling me he loves me, the sappy twerp. The thing is, I know I can't do this by myself. And maybe Tori is exactly what I need, if we don't strangle each other first.
Glad to hear it.
He gets up and smacks me on the back.
Because I bought Mom's ticket to Chicago, she leaves on Monday.
Chapter 6. Tori. The thick smell of cumin and chili powder wafts through the air, making my stomach growl. After one more stir, I tap the wooden spoon on the lip of the Dutch oven and place it in the I love my spicy Mexican spoon rest. That dumb thing still cracks me up, years after Brady gave it to my sister. Cooking is the one thing I'm decent at, but only because I've had a shitty social life this last year. Though having a man-free diet made me turn to the next best alternative, actual food. While my friends were out partying, I was watching the cooking channel, doing my best to whip up those recipes and trying not to feel like a loser. I peer over my shoulder at Kat, who's sitting at the kitchen table.
Hermana, are you sure you want it this spicy? I thought you had a lot of heartburn.
Her lips tighten briefly, and she blinks once, twice. Miss Pokerface has the audacity to smile and shrug like she hasn't a clue what I'm talking about. She's obviously hiding something. Whatever. She's been acting weird the whole day. Maybe I should chalk it up to a hormonal imbalance. If her feet weren't so swollen, she'd insist on making dinner, but I talked her into kicking back and relaxing, even though she's going to be a backseat driver.
Did you put in the Rotel tomatoes? She asks, eyeing the pot suspiciously.
See? Backseat driver.
Yeah, and when you're hanging over the toilet later tonight, puking your little heart out, don't blame me.
She gives me that strange smile, the one that tells me she's keeping a secret and thinks I'm clueless. The front door slams shut, and the stomp of boots coming through the living room echoes closer. Izzy comes racing around the corner with her arms open wide. 3, 2, 1. I turn back toward the stove as the sound of her feet stop, which tells me she's gone airborne, followed by a grunt as she throws herself at her father. She might be 7, but she's a total daddy's girl.
There's my angel, his voice rings out in the small kitchen. And here's my other angel.
A minute later, the sound of smacking makes me smile and shake my head. Without looking, I know Brady has Izzy in his arms, and he's leaning down to plant a wet one on Kat.
Too much kissing, Izzy jokes, and I snicker to myself.
That kid is my mini-me, much to the chagrin of my sister. Stirring the pot again, I give them a moment to be lovey-dovey. It makes me strangely emotional to be around them. They're this perfect family unit. Every day, their house is filled with warmth and love. Even though I try to tell myself I don't want this, that I don't want a husband or kids because I know I'm a fuck-up. When I'm around Brady and Kat and little Izzy, I do want the happily ever after. So much it makes my chest ache. Damn Jamie for making me think that was possible. I clench my jaw. When I think the love fest is over, I turn around.
Something smells good,
Brady says, setting his daughter down.
Ethan's still coming over for dinner?
Mr. Ethan's coming over?
Izzy grins.
What the? What?
My sister cringes and laughs awkwardly. Crossing my arms, I squint.
Something you want to tell me, Catherine?
We never discussed what happened at Ethan's 2 days ago. What was the point? It was clear from everyone's expressions in the living room they heard my argument with Ethan. His mom, his brother, my sister, the kids. Although, to be honest, I'm not sure what we argued about. It was more about how Ethan made me feel. Like I wasn't good enough. Like I was putting him out with my very existence. Like he took one glance at me and found me lacking. The part of me that's always screwing up wonders if I was being overly sensitive. That maybe Ethan's just a crabby ass in general, and I was reading into things that weren't there. Wouldn't be the first time. I know Kat was disappointed in me for how I reacted to Ethan. She gets quiet when she thinks I'm being a dick. Like I'm in time out and she wants me to think about what I've done. It's annoying as hell. And for the last 2 days, she's been really quiet around me. I'm typically not one to shy away from saying what's on my mind, but I have to be careful with my sister. She's so hormonal that she'll start crying if I'm too blunt, and I'm never prepared for her tears. Kat waits until I drag myself to the kitchen table to level me with an innocent smile. Did I forget to mention that Ethan is joining us for dinner? Must have slipped my mind. My brother-in-law chuckles and kisses the top of her head.
I'll get Izzy cleaned up for dinner while you guys work this out.
I'm clean, Dad. I wasn't rolling around in the barn or anything.
She huffs out a breath, but runs off to wash her hands in the bathroom. Motioning toward his wife, he gives me a crooked grin.
Don't be too hard on her.
I roll my eyes, and he laughs. Once Kat and I are alone, my shoulders slump. What are you doing? You know Ethan and I are like oil and vinegar. Really, I can't explain why I felt so defensive around him. It didn't help that he was so handsome, muscular and rugged from working on the ranch, tatted up and shirtless with his Levi's hanging low on his hips, dripping wet with water and temptation. All the more reason to stay away. Oil and vinegar are a great combo on salads. When I give her a blank stare, she holds up her hands. Just give him a chance to say his piece, okay? You don't have to agree to work for him if you're still not feeling it after dinner, but I think it would be nice to clear the air. I get that you're in this nesting period and want everyone to hold hands and sing campfire songs while you gestate, so I understand why you want this. But why does he need to clear the air? It's obvious I'm not who he wants taking care of his kids. Tilting her head, she shrugs. Maybe he was having a bad day. Everyone has them. I just know you shouldn't write him off because he was grouchy. He's a single dad doing it all by himself, Tor. He has a lot on his plate. But if you give him a chance, you'll see he's a good guy. That he's trying his best. Fuck, when she says it like that. My sister, always the peacekeeper.
Fine. But just because I don't stab him at dinner with the blunt edge of my fork doesn't mean I'm agreeing to this, so don't get your hopes up.
You know me, she chirps. Zero expectations. For some reason, that doesn't make me feel better.
Chapter 7. Ethan. A smoky orange sun filters through the trees, washing the horizon in the waning daylight. My truck bumps along the gravel driveway until I pull to a stop behind two Ford F-150s. Brady's farmhouse isn't tricked out like mine, but his is far more charming, more welcoming. From the warm glow of the living room behind that picture window to the porch swing, everything about this place says home. Making my way to the porch, I recognize the improvements he and Kat have made over the years. New siding, pretty planter boxes, a brand new playset complete with a winding slide and monkey bars for their daughter, and rows of lavender bushes that stretch into the distance. When I reach the front door, I look down to make sure I'm respectable. Jeans, t-shirt, boots. Sure, maybe I could have tried a little harder, dressed up more, but this isn't a date. Before I can think too long and hard about why I'm nervous, I wipe my sweaty palms down the front of my jeans. Yes, this is fucking weird. Just gotta be nice to Tori. See if we can have a civil conversation. At least I can tell my brother I tried to make this work. I balance the six-pack of beer in my arm while I knock. Brady said he felt like Corona tonight when I texted to ask what I could bring. Good thing I checked, because I was about to get him some Sam Adams, since he's from Boston and that's usually what he orders when we hang out. When Brady opens the door, the smell of chili and baked things I can't begin to understand how to make waft out. Hey man, come in. Everyone's in the kitchen. Whatever you're making smells amazing. I hand him the beer and slap him on the back. I'd say thank you, but I didn't have anything to do with it. We pass through the living room and into the modest kitchen. I wave to Kat and Izzy, who are sitting at the table, even though my attention immediately zones in on Tori, who is standing at the stove. Her dark brown hair hangs down her back in long waves, and she's wearing cutoffs that make her ass look like a juicy peach. My palms itch to feel those sweet curves. The thought is alarming. Kat waves me into the room.
Hey, Ethan. I'd get up to hug you, but my baby keeps bumping my kidneys, and I'd rather not jostle the little kickboxer right now.
I nod and take off my baseball cap. Good to see you. Thanks for the invitation to dinner. Brady holds up the six-pack.
Hey, Tor. Look what Ethan brought. Your favorite beer.
I'll be damned. Guess the beer isn't for him after all. Finally, the mermaid turns around. Maybe it's the way the evening sun shines through the kitchen window, making Tori glow in a dreamy light. Maybe it's the fact that I was baking like a catfish in the hot sun all day and probably have heat stroke. Or maybe it's because I'm so hungry I could eat an entire Black Angus by myself. But Tori Duran looks like the most beautiful creature I've ever seen. No makeup or fuss, just that thick, dark mane and those golden green eyes staring back, wary and cautious, guarded. Of course she's guarded, asshole. You were a dick to her the other day. I do that thing with my face where I try to smile. Hey, Tori. Nice to see you again. The girl laughs humorlessly.
Did you really bring that beer, or did Brady tell you it was for him?
Rubbing my jaw, I consider how to answer. Lying isn't my strong suit. Never lied to my wife, tried not to lie to my parents growing up. What was the point when they could always sniff out the truth anyway? Though it doesn't make sense why I want to now, except I don't want to hurt Tori's feelings. Plus, something twisted in me suddenly wants to please this girl. Taking a few steps closer and leaning in so I don't curse in front of Izzy, I whisper, "If I admit I got it for your brother-in-law, am I back on your shit list?" Although I expect my answer to piss her off, the corner of her mouth tilts up like she's amused.
"You haven't worked your way off it."
Her eyes squint playfully.
"But honesty is a start."
When I smile at her, a real one because I'm genuinely glad to see her, Her lips part and she sucks in a breath. I give her a wink. I just need one chance, darling.
Chapter 8. Tori. Dinner passes in a whirlwind of pleasantries between Brady, Kat, and Ethan. I watch them and push the food around on my plate and contemplate why this guy is being nice to me when he seemed to loathe my existence 2 days ago. And I wonder why, when he aims that smile at me, I feel the singe of a live wire, my skin heating and burning under his scrutiny. Why I can't seem to catch my breath. Almost as if I like him. Sweat breaks out on my back, and I sink back in my seat. This is completely unacceptable. I can't like a man, especially this man. I will not be charmed by Ethan Carter, or his big blue eyes and rough edges. See, I can do this. I am a strong, independent woman who doesn't need a man, and that's how it's going to stay. I straighten my shoulders, proud of my internal pep talk. Isn't that great, Tor? My sister nudges me with her elbow. I'm sorry, what? Her eyes widen like I need to pay attention, and I shrug, willing myself not to feel embarrassed. Ethan was saying how if you took the nanny position, you could borrow his truck to bartend at night. Since you had mentioned wanting to pick up some shifts somewhere. Ugh, like I really want him to know I don't have a car, that I don't have near enough money to fix my old clunker. When I look up, my eyes connect with his across the table. That's nice of you. Though I'm not sure I have anything worked out yet. No one seems to be hiring around here.
Have you tried the Yellow Rose? Just opened up off the access road. I know the guy who runs the place.
He scoops the last spoonful of chili into his mouth, makes a growly noise, and points to the empty bowl.
That was fantastic.
Tori made it. She's a great cook. Kat rambles on about my eclectic cuisine, like I studied with Gordon Ramsay or something. Instead of the truth, that I like to veg out to cooking shows, and I have a big Mexican family that demands 10 million tamales at Christmas. Ethan tips his Corona at me.
Well, dinner was delicious. Chili is one of my favorites.
You don't say. My eyes shift to my sister, who eats her second helping of cornbread and salad, not daring to touch the chili. Interesting. My sister said she was really in the mood for chili, and yet she hasn't eaten one bite. Kat shrugs, her lips tilting up. I started thinking you were right, that I shouldn't eat anything that spicy. Go figure. Izzy yawns over her plate of half-eaten chicken nuggets, and Kat motions for Brady to help her up.
We're going to get Izzy ready for bed. You two chat. There's a fresh pot of coffee brewing and a cheesecake in the freezer, so help yourselves.
When did she make coffee? I honestly can't tell if she wants me to work for Ethan or marry the man. Brady picks up his daughter, and a second later, Ethan and I are alone. He chuckles and takes a long pull of his beer. His dirty blonde hair is disheveled and pointing in 10 different directions, but Lord help me, it looks good. He's still smiling when I level him with a stare. Why are you being nice to me? What do you want? I've been around the block enough times to know when something is off. I'm not going to sleep with you, if that's what you think you're getting by having me move in. The smile slides off his face.
Jesus, Tori. Do you accuse every potential employer of lechery?
My face burns, but I'm not ashamed of asking what I need to know. Because I won't have sex with you, not even if you're the last guy on the planet. An annoying smirk quirks his lips.
No one said I was asking, darling. Besides,
his eyes pass over me.
You're not my type.
For some reason, that irritates me more. Well, good.
Good.
He rubs a rough hand over the stubble on his square jaw.
So, we're clear about that? No sex? Not even if I'm the last man on the planet?
Not even then, I whisper. We stare at each other, his amused blue eyes studying my face like he's seeing me for the first time. His eyebrows lift, and then I can't help it. I laugh. We both do. Before things get any weirder, I get up and start clearing the plates with a sigh. I'm not good at job interviews.
You don't say.
Shocking, I know. I'm not fool enough to think I had that one law firm internship because of my amazing people skills or grades. No, that came compliments of my sweet sister and her impressive Austin connections. She took me getting fired remarkably well back then, but she wasn't pregnant when I called her crying because I had gotten axed for telling off one of the partners. Truth be told, I don't want to disappoint Kat. It's one thing to disappoint my parents, they're used to it. But Kat, for some reason, she seems to think I have potential. It cuts me to the core to think of letting her down. Again. The only thing that freaks me out more than truly displeasing my sister is a face-to-face encounter with a spider. Don't laugh. They're evil. I shiver at the thought. A minute later, Ethan's by my side at the sink. He grabs the bowls out of my hands and scrubs them down before handing them to me to rinse. He's big. Way bigger than I am. Broad and tall and rugged. Standing so close to him at the sink reminds me of the first time I saw him, shirtless and dripping wet, with all those muscles and that angry ink etched into his golden skin. The kind of guy to make a girl ache in just the right ways. If he were another guy and I another girl. This close, I can smell his shower gel. Something manly and crisp. He must have showered right before he came over. I clear my throat. Would you need me to cook or clean your house, too?
I'm not hiring you to be my maid. Just to take care of Mila and Cody. I'll do my best to make them dinner, clean the house, do our laundry. Those aren't your jobs, and I never want you to feel like they are. If you don't care that I smell like a barn animal, I can probably come in to make them a quick breakfast if you want. Then you'd only have to make them lunch.
Something about that image softens me. Ethan slaving away in the heat and stopping to take care of his kids. I'm starting to get what my sister said about this guy doing it all on his own. I can handle breakfast and lunch. That's not a big deal. I shift to get a quick glance at him and am overwhelmed by his presence when he reaches across me to turn off the faucet. His voice is low and gravelly.
Listen, I really am sorry for being such an asshole to you the other day. I'd love nothing more than for you to take care of my kids. I promise to stay out of your way and not annoy you too much.
He dries his hands on his shirt and turns to me, but he's looking at the ground.
You asked why I'm being nice.
Those big blue eyes shift up until they sear into mine.
Well, I'm a nice guy. No one seems to think that, but I am. I've had a rough few years.
As though he's flipping through a memory book, he frowns and glances away.
I'm going through an ugly divorce, and my mom, who's been keeping my household together since my wife left, is headed to Chicago on Monday to help her sister. I can't keep the business afloat and take care of my children by myself. It kills me to admit that, but it's true. So I guess you could say, I need you. I need your help.
I don't like how those words, I need you, make me feel soft and squishy, like a piece of bittersweet chocolate left out in the sun. Why not call one of those nanny agencies? get someone who's fingerprinted and meets your qualifications.
I'm on some waiting lists, but they're not sure they'll find someone willing to live out here.
His eyes turn up to mine, a playfulness brightening his expression.
Should I be worried? Do you have a criminal record for all the coke and hookers?
I laugh, remembering what I told him the other day. Not exactly, but...
Then it's fine. Don't let my kids cook meth or play with sharp objects, and we should be good.
Chapter 9. Ethan. The house feels different with Tori in it. Perhaps because nothing's really settled. After some begging and eating crow on my part at dinner the other night, Tori agreed to help me for the next 2 weeks. Long enough to see if she can get someone to sublet her apartment and for me to explore whether an agency can better handle my situation. It seemed prudent to contact an agency in case Tori and I ended up clashing again. The fact we didn't at dinner was a pleasant surprise, and if it taught me anything, it's that I want us to get along in the meantime. I want her to know I'll treat her well, that I'm not really an asshole. As for my unbidden attraction to her, I figure it'll pass. I haven't been around a beautiful woman in a long time. Living on a ranch doesn't make socializing easy. I don't count Mallory Mathers or the like because hooking up with one of my wife's friends seems about as smart as jamming a wet finger in a light socket. It's been ages since I've been with anyone. Not since Allison, and that intimacy ended during her pregnancy with Cody. His second birthday later this summer is a reminder that she shut me out a long time ago. 2 years is a long damn time to go without sex. I'm 28, not 80. Maybe my brother is right, and I'd need to get out more. Start dating or something to take the edge off. Especially since Tori made it abundantly clear I'm not the kind of guy she goes for, that we would never have sex. I chuckle, thinking about the fire in her eyes as the little tornado told me off again, all that passion oozing from her pores. But she doesn't have anything to worry about. I'd never take advantage of a woman. As for her not being my type, well, that's mostly true. I've always gone for the polite and polished kind of woman, and a little high maintenance. Not sure why, since Allison has been anything but polite in the last few years. Tori has a wildness about her, a level of honesty I'm not used to, at least not from a perfect stranger. I think I like it. I just can't like it too much. After so much time out of the dating game, it's weird to think about diving back in. It's even weirder to consider dating when my divorce isn't final yet. But I know from mutual friends that Allison has already been out with other men. The thought makes my chest feel heavy with too many emotions to name. A soft knock on the office door makes me look up.
I'm packed and ready to go, son.
The sight of my mother dressed for the airport shoots a bolt of fear through me. She starts talking like it's not a big deal she's going to another state.
I told Tori where to find Cody's hiding places, how to get the kids to brush their teeth, where the emergency numbers are, their daily schedule. Everything's gonna be fine.
I was never a mama's boy growing up. That was Logan. But I'll admit, I'm a little torn up seeing her go. Probably because we relied so heavily on each other after my father died. We head into the living room where Tori is on the floor, dressed like a princess, compliments of my daughter's styling efforts. Cody is hanging off Tori's neck, and Mila is debating which bauble would look best on her new babysitter.
Give your grandma a hug goodbye.
I motion for the kids to get up. Mila takes one look at my mother, sees the suitcase behind her, and immediately starts bawling. Rushing into her grandmother's arms, she cries so hard she starts hiccuping.
Mom coos in her ear. Honey, calm down. I'm only going for a month or two. I'll be back soon.
But what if you don't come back? What if you stay away like Mommy? What if you don't want us anymore?
I close my eyes, my daughter's words a cattle brand on my heart. Does this ever get easier?
Sweetie, I'm always, always gonna want you and your brother, and your mama wants you guys too.
Her voice is thick with emotion.
She's just going through a rough time is all.
Smoothing down my daughter's hair, my mom whispers,
I'm only a phone call away. Call me anytime, night or day.
She pulls out of my daughter's hug and holds her shoulders.
Hey, look at me.
Mila's tear-stricken face cuts me to the core.
I need you to be a big girl and take care of your daddy and brother. Two men in a house by themselves need a good woman to look after them.
Mila nods and wipes away snot.
I can make Daddy Pop-Tarts for breakfast so he's not hungry. That a girl. And you remember how he likes his coffee, right? Two sugars and a good helping of milk. Don't use half and half even though he likes it, because he should watch those trans fats now while he's young.
Hearing the two most important girls in my life worry about me makes my chest ache.
I'm wondering how I'm gonna get Mila out of my mom's arms when Tori approaches them and whispers in Mila's ear. Not sure what she says, but Mila starts laughing, and Tori picks her up and swings her around so she's on her back, clinging to her neck.
Have a great trip, Beverly.
Tori says cheerfully, like my whole family isn't on the brink of an apocalypse.
Mila and I are gonna have a big surprise for you when you get back, aren't we, Mila?
My daughter wipes her eyes and nods and smiles at my mom.
Big, big, big surprise.
I stand there, a little dumbfounded that this train wreck has turned around, until Tori mouths,
It's okay. Go.
She turns her back, so she and Mila are facing the other way. As I'm walking my mom out, I pause in the doorway to look at my kids, who are playing with Tori like nothing happened. Only one thought comes to mind. Thank God she's here. It's dark when I get back, much later than I thought I'd be. Austin traffic sucked, as always, and Mom's flight was delayed. That was when I realized I didn't have Tori's cell number and she didn't have mine. I was thinking I was the worst parent ever when I remembered my mom had shown Tori the emergency numbers. My brother sprawled on a couch, flipping through baseball channels when I stride into the house. Thanks for coming over. When I realized I couldn't call Tori's cell and she wasn't picking up the office phone, why would she? I called Logan and asked him to check on the kids and let Tori know I was running late.
No problemo. Wasn't like I had plans.
His brow lifts meaningfully. On a Monday night?
Yeah, with this hot as fuck waitress I met last week. Thanks for cock blocking, by the way.
I roll my eyes. God forbid my brother doesn't get laid regularly. He waves the remote in my direction without taking his eyes off the TV.
Do you need Joey to babysit for you this weekend? She says to call or text if you do.
Yeah, I might need an extra pair of hands. I told Tori she could have the weekends off, and I don't want to break that promise. Joey is my brother's best friend. She's a couple of years younger than Logan and has helped my mom with the kids once or twice. But the girl has her hands full at home. Even though I thought to ask her about babysitting full time, I know she'd never be able to.
Where is everyone?
The house is quiet. Too quiet.
Asleep, I guess.
Tori got Mila and Cody to bed?
Yep.
He keeps clicking channels.
No thanks required, bro. Don't even mention how I found a Disney princess to be your nanny.
I don't need a pat on the back or anything.
I roll my eyes and kick off my boots so my shoes don't wake up the kids. If Tori were a princess, she'd definitely be Ariel the mermaid, only with thick brown hair and a rounder, biteable ass. The back hallway is dark, and I tiptoe into Cody's room. Sure enough, he's nestled in bed and zonked out to the world. Leaning down to give him a kiss, I realize Tori must have given him a bath because he smells like clean little boy instead of the stinker I handed her this afternoon. I check the kids' bathroom, certain it must look like a hurricane blew through it because my kidlets are hellions in the tub. But everything is neat and clean. I'm half ready to thank my lucky stars for our new nanny when I get to Mila's room and find her bed empty. Panic builds in my gut as I fly down the hall to Tori's room. The door is open and the bedside lamp is on. And there, in the middle of the bed, are Tori and Mila, curled up on the comforter, sound asleep, with a copy of Bedtime for Francis next to them. Seeing my daughter, safe and sound, makes me feel foolish for freaking out. Reaching down to scoop up Mila, I gently move Tori's arm, and her lids flutter open.
Hey,
she whispers. I hold up one finger to tell her to hang on while I pick up my daughter. Mila's like a sack of potatoes in my arms. After I tuck her into her own bed, I stop back in Tori's doorway. My eyes widen when I realize how intimate this is. Tori on her bed in a tiny black tank top and sleep shorts, her gorgeous hair tumbling over her shoulders, the quiet house and soft lighting. Taking a step back, I look away to give her some privacy. Did they wear you out? I ask, realizing she must be as tired as my kids. Sorry I woke you. Didn't think you'd want Mila kicking your face in the middle of the night. She sleeps like a starfish.
No worries,
she says as she yawns.
I tried to follow your mom's directions on that sheet. Got them fed and bathed and in bed on time, but I have to confess, they ate pizza for dinner with nary a vegetable in sight.
I chuckle and pull off my baseball cap to push my hair back. Reversing the bill, I pull the hat on backwards. If that's the worst crime, I think you did as well as I could have. It's true. Given how upset Mila was this afternoon, the fact that the rest of the day went smoothly is nothing short of a miracle. Thanks for taking care of dinner and their bedtime routine. Usually I can do that, so you have your evenings free. Thinking back to my crisis earlier today and not being able to reach her, I tap on her doorframe. Before I forget, I need your cell number. Her lips tug up in one corner as she stretches like a cat.
No sexting, remember?
My eyes shoot up to hers. At first, I can't tell if she's joking or if she really thinks I'm the dick who sends out, well, pics of my dick or dirty messages. Can't say I've ever done either of those with a girl, even in college. Would Allison have been into that sort of thing? Hell, I never thought to test those waters. She laughs.
Just messing with you, but you should see the look on your face.
She calls out her digits, and I tap out her number on my cell, shaking my head the whole time. When I'm done, I slip my phone in my back pocket.
You know, you're kind of a menace when you're not playing Mary Poppins.
As soon as the words are out of my mouth, I'm worried I offended her, but the smile she gives me is brilliant and wide and more than a little mischievous.
Don't think I don't know this.
Shaking my head again, I start to close the door. Night, Tasmanian devil. She snickers.
Night, Wolverine.
Chapter 10 Tori. Lying in bed, I wonder why I flirted with him tonight. In the moment, I didn't think it was that flirty. I've said worse things to my friends. But Ethan isn't a friend. He's my employer, and sexting is not what you discuss with an employer. I guess I am an HR nightmare. I was half asleep, and he looked so damn cute with his baseball cap on backwards and that sweet expression he gets when he's talking about his kids, and the way his t-shirt stretched across his broad chest, showcasing his tattoos, made my mouth water. I can't explain why, but I wanted to yank his chain and see how he took it. Yank his chain. Ha, I'd definitely love to yank that. Wait. No. Hell no. I squeeze my eyes shut to get him out of my head. I cannot get a thing for this guy. No way. Is he even divorced yet? And didn't I throw down the gauntlet the other day with the no sex ever conversation? Not to mention, I'm not his type. Is there an AA meeting for this sort of thing? Attraction to unavailable men? Because I definitely should look into attending. After my breakup with Jamie, I researched a woman's sex drive and found an interesting article that said the more you fed your libido, the more you craved sex. So I figured if I starved the damn thing, the need might disappear. Abstaining from sex sounded reasonable at the time, but now, a year into this endeavor, now I want to be touched and cuddled and fucked until I can't walk straight. This is worse than that dumb carb-free fast I tried in high school, which resulted with me stuffing my face with every biscuit, muffin, and tortilla I could get my hands on for 3 days straight when I finally caved. With a groan, I kick off the covers, flip on the bedside lamp, and look around my room. Most of my stuff is still in my apartment in Austin, so I don't even have the one no-frills vibrator I didn't throw out last summer. If I acquaint myself with the deluxe shower head I noticed in my bathroom, will I wake everyone up? Ugh, not worth it. Stay strong, Victoria. Whimpering, I flop back on the bed and cross my arm over my face. At least when I was waiting tables and bartending, I had daily, hell, hourly, reminders of how hot guys were dirtbags. But here, stranded with Mr. Sexy as Fuck Farm Boy, I sense the thrill of the chase toying with my resistance, especially now that I'm seeing Ethan's not the giant asshole I assumed he was when we first met. I mentally flip through this last year, where I really only did two things to keep my mind off Jamie. I worked and cooked. Maybe I can use that as an outlet here. Not only is cooking for the kids something I'll enjoy, more elaborate meals wear me out, so I shouldn't have an ounce of extra energy to lust after their dad. The buzz of an incoming call interrupts my wallowing, but when I see the name on my cell screen, I groan. I love my best friend Vivian, but not the way we always seem to get in trouble when we're together. An all-girl Catholic high school did nothing to tame the two of us. If anything, it made Viv and me rebel more when we were younger, and college only made us wilder. But we haven't hung out in ages, and I'm starting to feel guilty about it. "Why aren't you at my party?" she asks without preamble. A thumping bass punctuates every other word. She must head into a quiet room because the music fades to a low roar. "I didn't know you were back from South Padre." I don't bother explaining that some of us have to work for a living. She works for her father, but he's always letting her set her own hours. Yawning, I try to follow what she's saying. "Wait, were you asleep? At 9 p.m. Got a new job. Sort of. Everything with Ethan is so up in the air, I don't know if he really plans for me to be here the entire summer. Or if I want to be here that long. except there's no other way I can be as close to Kat if this doesn't work out. I give Viv a brief rundown of how I came to be the newest employee at Carter Cutting Horses.
Have you fucked him yet?
She chews ice in my ear.
Fucked who?
The dad. He sounds hot, and you've always had a thing for assholes.
Of course I haven't fucked him. He's my boss.
And he's not really an asshole.
Never stopped you before.
I sigh, feeling the exhaustion of my past bulldoze over me. I never slept with any of my bosses. People only think I have because I run with friends like Val. Sure, I've had plenty of hookups, and yes, I love sex. But I have a morality clause. No bosses or guys who have dated my friends. As soon as you bang someone's ex, you're headed for crazy town, and I have enough of that in my life without chumming the water.
Really?
She sounds disappointed.
I swear.
Jamie wasn't your boss.
The sound of his name makes me wince.
No, he wasn't my boss. He was my boss's friend, which was bad enough. Because, one, my boss Kevin never bothered to tell me my boyfriend was fucking married. And two, when Jamie and I unceremoniously broke up that fateful day, I had to quit my bartending job or face the very real possibility of seeing him because he frequented that restaurant. And there was no way I was ever talking to that scumbag again. I changed my number, switched my job, and eventually moved when he kept stalking my place and sending me flowers. Nothing says, "Hey, sorry I didn't tell you I was a cheating douchebag," like bouquets of carnations. Who apologizes with the cheapest flowers in the state of Texas? Even after I trashed them, they left behind that sickeningly sweet scent that reminded me of my grandmother's funeral.
Are you still on that man diet thing?
No dicks for me, figuratively or literally.
That's a shame. I have a friend.
No, he's super hot.
Then you date him, and I'll live vicariously through your escapades.
She laughs maniacally.
No one said date him. Just let him bang your brains out so you can get over your aversion to attractive men and see that you need to move back to Austin. Then we can party the whole summer. Come on, you haven't been the same since Jamie. Where's the BFF I know and love?
Girlfriend, I have to work. I have bills to pay. Daddy ain't gonna cover my rent. I can almost hear her rolling her eyes.
George doesn't pay my rent.
She calls her parents by their first names. My mother would smack me with her chancla if I ever did that.
I have a salary, thank you very much.
A salary Daddy pays even when you don't show up to work. But when she doesn't stop badgering me, I promise to go out with her. I might need a break from Ethan Carter pronto anyway.
Yay! She yells into the phone. We'll have a blast! One night of partying never hurt anyone.
I don't bother pointing out how we both know that's not true. One night is all it takes for everything to go wrong. When I wake up the next morning, a precious face grins at me over the edge of the bed.
Hey, Mila.
What time is it? Ethan didn't specify what time he wanted me to get the kids up, only that they ate around 8, and it's not quite 7:15.
Sorry, I woke you. Did I wake you?
She bounces up and down on her toes. This kid is like sunshine on crack. I smile at her, even though it pains me to be so cheerful this early in the day without a shot of coffee injected straight into my jugular. Baby babble sounds through a tiny speaker on the bedside table. Ethan must have put the baby monitor there this morning before he headed out to work with the horses. Cody isn't quite 2, so of course his dad still has a monitor for him. I feel dumb for not thinking about that sooner.
Mila, Can you do me a favor and keep your brother company for a few minutes while I brush my teeth? I'll be right out.
I can do that.
She leaps into action, a blur of little girl racing out the door. My laughter turns into a groan as I try to roll out of bed. When I bartend, I usually go to bed around 3 or 4, sometimes later. So getting up with the cows is not something my body knows how to do. I haven't gotten up this early since that internship fired me. A few minutes later, when I get to Cody's room, his big smile perks me up. These kids are so freaking happy. I don't know what to do with myself. I grin at him and snuggle his warm body to me. Did you sleep well, Munchkin? He nuzzles closer. I close my eyes, loving his sweet baby scent. Are you hungry? His grumbling tummy answers the question, and I hurry to get him changed so I can feed him. It takes a few minutes to wrestle him out of his pajamas, and when I get to his diaper, his smile widens.
Poopies!
He kicks his chubby legs.
Poopies!
Okay, buddy. Thanks for the warning. Except for the toxic diaper, the morning goes smoothly. But by lunchtime, Mila's not wearing that bright smile anymore. This little girl who never stops moving is staring out the back window, completely frozen. I kneel down next to her. What's wrong, honey? You look worried. Her lips twist in her cherubic face. She waves me closer to whisper in my ear.
Can we make my daddy something to eat?
I almost laugh, except the serious expression on her face tells me I shouldn't. What does he usually do for lunch?
My grandma makes him food.
Ethan expressly told me I shouldn't make him any meals, but that's kind of weird if he's used to coming into the house to eat. What is he doing for lunch? Movement catches my eye in the backyard, and I look across the expansive field to the beautiful red barn where Ethan leads a horse to his stall. Returning my attention to Mila, I give her a hug. How about we make some extra food in case he comes in for lunch? She looks down, still frowning, and nods. Clearly, that wasn't the answer she wants to hear. Mila, what would you like to do for your dad? What would make you happy?
Can we make him lunch and take it to him?
This kid is too sweet. Of course we can. And if he doesn't want it, too damn bad, because I'm not sure I can tell her no.
Chapter 11. Ethan. Logan and I toil side by side the entire morning, grooming horse after horse. I should be shitting rainbows after seeing how well the kids have taken to Tori, but the phone call I got from my lawyer this morning put me on edge again. My brother takes a swig of his water bottle and wipes the sweat off his brow.
So it's set then? When you guys go before the judge in a few weeks, it'll be a done deal? You'll be divorced?
I grunt, hating the looming court date. That word, divorce, sounds so final. I guess it is. The misery of the last 2 years weighs on my heart, the failure of it reverberating through my bones. This isn't what I wanted for my kids. Splitting time between two houses, me worrying if they left their clothes or toys behind, wondering what they're doing, hating that I'm not with them. I may work a lot now, but I can check on them a dozen times throughout the day and hear their laughter when they're playing in the yard.
You want me to come with you to court?
Logan chugs another drink and then douses his face.
I could tag along.
He's acting like we're talking about grabbing a beer instead of ending my marriage. I could use the support, though. Yeah, thanks. As I brush out the mare, it settles in, how out of reach my dream of riding cutting horses competitively has become. I'll never be able to do it again, At least not when the financial future of the ranch is so uncertain, and definitely not while I'm still figuring out how to be a single parent. What tears at my conscience is how much my father wanted me to get back in the arena. But I don't see how I can make that happen with all of these responsibilities I'm dealing with right now. With a grimace, I pinch the bridge of my nose. I can't even drown my sorrows with a good bottle of whiskey because I have so much shit to do. We wash down one more mare before Logan breaks the silence.
Sandra keeps asking about you.
I have no idea who he's talking about, but he ignores my foul mood and keeps talking.
She's that cute realtor we met at the Lone Star, the one who got divorced last year?
He sighs. The one with the son? It takes me a minute, but then I remember, mostly because I heard her ex was abusive, which pisses me off. I don't understand how a man can hurt a woman. Logan nods at me.
Want me to set you up? You've been a monk for too long, and this court date gives us the perfect reason to celebrate.
Using the words celebrate and court date in the same sentence make me cringe. But I know he's pissed at Allison on my behalf.
Come on, bro. One beer, maybe an appetizer, that's it. Sandra's a cutie, but if you're not ready to wham-bam thank you, ma'am, I'm sure you could keep it casual.
My brother, the romantic. He nudges my arm and I shrug him off. Fine, one beer, whatever it takes to get you to shut up.
Or, even better, we could go to the coast for the weekend, maybe when Allison is watching the kids.
With everything I have to do around here, taking a weekend to act like I'm young and carefree is impractical. How in the world would I pull that off? The words are barely out of my mouth when a little voice shouts,
Daddy! We brought you lunch!
A huge smile lifts my lips before I'm done turning around. Standing in the open gate, with sunlight streaming behind them, are Mila, Cody, and Tori. Mila's carrying a huge picnic basket, one my mother stores over the kitchen cabinets, while Tori bounces Cody on her hip and waves. It's such a rare treat to see the kids back here that I instantly feel the sadness from a minute ago start to lift. Tori hoists my son higher in her arms.
Sorry to bother you, but Mila wanted to make you lunch.
It's no bother. I'll never turn away food. I kneel down to Mila's eye level, and she throws herself in my arms like she hasn't seen me in a week. Worry fills my heart, and my eyes connect with Tori, who gives me a look of understanding. Her voice is soft, comforting.
She's having a good afternoon. She just misses you.
Rubbing Mila's back, I realize how hard this must be for her. Having my mom leave and a new babysitter take over the very next second. I should have planned this better and overlapped them more.
Hey, I whisper into my daughter's hair. You totally made my day.
Yeah?
When she pulls back, she wipes her eyes, but even though she's emotional, she's smiling.
Yep, I was having a crummy morning, but then my favorite people stopped by.
She looks up at Tori and leans toward me to whisper,
Tori made the food, but I helped.
I'm sure it's delicious, I say, watching how Tori averts her eyes when I look at her.
What'd you make?
Mila jumps up and down.
Sandwiches and salad.
I'll be starving again in an hour, but this sweet delivery fills me up in other ways.
Sure was thoughtful of you.
I wait until Tori looks at me to say those words to my daughter, so Tori knows they're meant for her, too. I tell my ranch hands to take a break and corral my brood into the corner stall that's been outfitted into a small office with an extra table. Tori hands Cody to me, and I kiss his chubby belly and make him laugh while the girls set out the food. And holy shit, my daughter's simple description of the meal doesn't do it justice, because Tori didn't just make sandwiches and salad.
My mouth waters when I see the thick, succulent pieces of meat wedged between the lightly toasted slices of bread. You made a roast and homemade potato salad? My mom left a roast to thaw in the fridge before she left, and I guess there must have been a sack of potatoes somewhere in the pantry. I'm almost tempted to say Tori looks embarrassed at the spread. She tucks her hands in the back pockets of her cutoffs and nods.
That okay?
She glances up at me, her hair tumbling over her shoulders and hiding half of her face.
I probably should have asked first. There's more than enough for you guys for dinner, if you don't mind eating the same thing later.
This is amazing. I get my daughter seated next to me and prop Cody on my lap while I dig in. Flavor explodes on my tongue with the perfect spices and just the right amount of mayo. The meat practically melts in my mouth. I'm two bites in and halfway through a whole sandwich when Logan strolls up to our impromptu lunch.
Did you bring enough for me too?
He asks Tori, who is standing between me and Cody, helping him dig into a Tupperware of food that's been cut into toddler-sized pieces.
Shit, I should be doing that.
She tucks a long strand of hair behind her ear.
We brought plenty. I wasn't sure how hungry Ethan would be, so if he doesn't mind sharing.
I'm tempted to growl and keep this for myself, except my brother has been busting his ass all day. Nodding toward the empty chair across from me, I don't bother to stop devouring my lunch. He takes one look at the spread and wraps an arm around Tori and kisses the top of her head.
This freaking rocks. You're amazing.
Squeezing her harder, he looks at me.
Isn't she amazing?
Tori gives him a self-depreciating smile and her cheeks heat. I pause mid-bite, frozen with the very real desire to peel Logan off Tori with my fist.
Stop mauling the woman and sit your butt down and eat.
My attention darts back to Tori.
Yes, she's amazing.
She averts her eyes like she's at a loss for words.
Interesting.
You gonna join us? I peek in the basket and notice the last of the oatmeal cookies my mom made this weekend.
No, I lose my appetite when I cook, from smelling the food all that time, I guess.
She turns to Mila and unwraps her sandwich carefully so the thick chunks of meat don't fall out.
Make sure you eat at some point so my kids don't run you ragged. I can watch them for a bit if you need a break. I didn't intend for you to do a marathon cooking session while you babysat. Thought they could eat some chicken nuggets or mac and cheese or something easy for lunch.
Shrugging, she turns those big hazel eyes up to mine.
It's not a big deal. I like to cook, and your kitchen is amazing, so that makes it really fun. I don't mind. But if you have any requests, let me know ahead of time so I can make sure you have all the ingredients.
Logan leans forward in his seat.
You take requests?
I toss my napkin at his face. Not from you. He chuckles and winks at Tori, and I force myself not to clench my fists. Not sure why that bothers me, but it does. Logan's a flirt. That's who he is. But watching him fawn over Tori gets under my skin. When we're done eating, I head out into the main part of the barn. My kids are hanging off my brother when I notice Tori reaching up to pet one of our buckskin quarter horses, who's leaning his head out of his stall and enjoying the attention. Can't say I blame him. Her slender arms wrap around his neck, and she nuzzles him with her face. The moment is such a sweet one that it draws me closer. Allison never came back here, never cared about the horses. Makes me wonder if things would have been different if she had. It's not like I never invited her to see what I did. Would have loved to have her appreciate what my family and I spent our whole lives building.
What's his name?
Tori asks, her eyes full of wonder and appreciation for the magnificent animal in her arms. Reaching behind his ear, I give him a good scratch.
Moves like Mick Jagger,
but I call him Nick.
That's a crazy name.
She slides her hands over him, a beautiful smile on her face.
You ride?
I'm wildly curious now, given how comfortable she is petting Mick.
Nope.
Want to learn? Her bright eyes shift to mine.
Really?
Sure, why not? She bites that full lower lip.
You spend so much time with these guys, why would you want to work more to show me how to ride?
The words come without thinking. Because this doesn't feel like work. I'm not sure if I mean raising horses or the idea of teaching her what I do, but the answer is the same, regardless. I don't mean to check her out, but it's hard not to notice her beauty or her warm amber eyes, those rosy, flushed cheeks, her teasing smile. Tori twists her long hair up into a top knot, and I can't help appreciating her graceful neck, which has me looking down her body, my pulse quickening from the generous curves of her breasts beneath the maddeningly snug tank top. I look away, not wanting to be that guy. A moment later, her voice draws my attention back to her.
Must be nice to have something you love so much.
A cool breeze blows through the barn, and she tilts her head and closes her eyes.
To have something that's so a part of you, you feel it all the way down to the soles of your shoes.
It's fulfilling, for sure, and there's nothing like teaching someone who loves horses how to ride. It's true. It'd be a damn delight to show her the ropes if she's as interested in these guys as I think she is. Peeling off my baseball cap, I wipe the sweat off my forehead and put my baseball cap on backwards so I can feel more of that breeze on my face. I lower my voice so my children don't overhear. But I'd be lying if I said it wasn't stressful. Being here, doing this for my family, it's a lot of pressure. As much as I love the ranch, I wish I could spend more time with my kids. She studies my face, and those crazy golden eyes turn wistful.
You're a good guy, Ethan Carter.
Her praise washes over me, and I'm almost speechless from the compliment. I open my mouth, but a shrill female voice interrupts.
Ethan, honey! Yoo-hoo!
Mallory struts through my barn even though I don't have her down for a lesson today. The sweet, dreamy gaze in Tori's eyes shudders faster than my brother drops his drawers on a Friday night. Mallory flutters up to us.
And who is this?
She eyeballs Tori up and down, but Tori gives her a small smile.
Nobody, just the nanny. I'll get out of your hair so you guys can work.
With a quick wave, she wrangles the kids and is out the door before Mallory's claws fully extend. After I get my client out of my hair, I'm still thinking about Tori and how she made us lunch. Apparently, my brother is too. He elbows me when I reach for the leftover cookies in my desk.
Maybe you don't need to head out to find yourself a little hookup.
He wiggles his fingers around his head.
Because the sparks were flying around here earlier with you and your new employee.
Shut the fuck up, I grunt. You and I both know I have too much on my plate right now to entertain anything like that. But sometimes I wish I didn't.
Chapter 12. Tori. Even with my bedroom door closed, I can hear the kids in the kitchen. The way their dad talks sweetly to them, his deep voice, their laughter. Part of me, a big part of me, wants to go out there and enjoy dinner with them. But after we had lunch in the barn with Ethan and his brother, I don't need more opportunities to